The Oregon Department of Human Services is talking about foster parents this month in two contexts. First, it is National Foster Care Month, a chance to recognize the work that foster parents do to help children unrelated to them make it through life. The second context is the announcement of a new child protection system, a new way to address abuse and neglect cases that might not involve putting children into foster care. To talk about foster children and foster parents more generally, and to talk about the differential response model, we have with us Lois Day, who's the Child Welfare Director in Oregon's Department of Human Services. Lois, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And but just by way of full disclosure, I am a foster parent myself and have been for 9 years, so just wanted to make sure we have a relationship that exists beyond this radio program.
Well, thank you for doing that. That's excellent.
Pleasure's mine. I did read on the DHS website that the Child Welfare Division impacts 29,000 families a year. Is that a high number, or and which way is the trend going on that?
The trend is actually to receive more calls. We actually have about 30,000 families that we visited in 2012. And when we visit a family, really it's investigative in nature. We're trying to determine if something happened, what happened, and whether or not the family has needs that, you know, we can help them address. Primary goal is to ensure children are safe in their homes, and that's every child deserves, the opportunity to be raised at home, safe, with a supportive family. And we also believe that every family deserves the opportunity when they're challenged to access services that can help them keep their children safely at home. So that's our focus in this transformation we're undergoing.
And what brings about the transformation, I guess, is the big question. What's the impetus here?
Historically, Oregon has been a state that had a higher rate of placement than many states. And so we started looking at what was driving sort of our involvement with families. And what we found is that a large number of families that end up with founded allegations of abuse are actually being founded for neglect or threat of harm. And neglect is a different kind of abuse than sexual abuse or physical abuse. It's really an accumulation over time of incidences, you know, actions or failures to act on parents' part that end up with children being unsafe or at risk. And what we found when we looked at our data was that children whose families where they were experiencing neglect came into care at a higher rate than other forms of abuse, and they stayed longer in foster care. And so we felt like we weren't being really effective in our interaction with these families and helping the families address the issues to keep the kids at home. And we looked around the country and found that many states, I think in the 20s, were doing what's called differential response. And really what that means is they differentiated the front door of child welfare. We've traditionally had one method of responding. And what these states had done was they had added a track of response that was really geared more towards engaging the family in identifying what was challenging them and then really using them as the primary driver of accessing the services they need. The families that go into that track of response are generally families who are experiencing less severe or children are experiencing less severe types of abuse. The more severe types of abuse remain in the traditional track is what we call the other track. So we started looking at Oregon and decided that was something we wanted to investigate, was differentiating our front door and adding an alternate track of response.
So essentially the dividing line is between flat-out abuse and something that does not quite rise to the level of abuse. It's neglect or maybe the threat of abuse.
Well, in Oregon, neglect is, by definition, abuse. But I want to say that families that are experiencing neglect are generally they're challenged in different ways than families who have other forms of abuse. So frequently these families are experiencing poverty. There's a great deal of homelessness. There's mental health issues that they need assistance with. We find many of these families know that they are being challenged in a way that's causing their children to be unsafe, and they want to make a change to that, but they need some help.
Well, you can't change the underlying situation a lot. I mean, you can't do much to end poverty for a particular family. Can't necessarily do much to help them not be homeless. So what sorts of aid can DHS workers give that they didn't used to give?
Well, one of the I'll start that over. The legislature in 2011 first, and again in 2013, actually they passed a law called Strengthening, Preserving, and Reunifying Families Act. And that statute, they funded a service array that we went out to our communities with and said, where are the gaps in the services that families need? And we've been able to engage more service providers in every county to fill those gaps in the service array. So when you say that we can't actually help families not be homeless or, you know, address mental health issues, we actually can. When we collaborate with local communities in terms of this service array and helping families access services, we are able, as Oregonians, as the community and the department, we are able to help families access services that help move them in a direction where they're more stable and can take better care of their kids.
Was there any funding that came from the legislature with these moves in 2011 and 2013? In other words, did they provide more money to DHS, or was it just more information sharing between agencies that are not DHS?
No, they provided funds for the implementation of those programs. They provided $23.7 million in total funds, and we have been working with the communities to do their gap analysis and tell us where they need additional contracts for services. So the legislature did provide funds to increase the service array.
Lois Day is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the Child Welfare Director for the State of Oregon through the Oregon Department of Human Services. We're talking about essentially foster parenting, but in two contexts. One, it's Foster Care Month. The other one, we're talking about the differential response model now being rolled out in Oregon, in which not every case is going to be treated exactly the same, and it wasn't necessarily in the past anyway. We'll explore that in a moment. You can join us on the exchange, though, in this conversation, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Lois, in the process then of deciding what gets the traditional response and what gets the differential response, is there a checklist to go down? I mean, a number of boxes are checked, boom, it gets the traditional response. Fewer checked, you get the alternative?
There is a tool. It's not a check-the-box tool, but it is a tool that guides the screener, who is the person that takes the call in our department, guides them through a series of questions to help them understand which track it should enter. Yes, and so when a reporter calls us and says, I believe some children are at risk or are being abused, the screener, who's our employee, takes a lot of information about why the caller believes that's true and then makes the initial determination of whether or not what they are concerned about rises to the level of potential abuse. If it does, then the screener goes into this tool we have that's the track assignment tool and answers a series of questions to help them make the assignment to either the traditional track or the alternate track. And then it's assigned to a worker who does a field response.
So based on past history, I mean, I don't know how much looking back you did. I mean, have you figured out what percentage of cases might have been able to get the alternative response in a given year, in a given period of time?
I don't have numbers for a given year, but we did test the track tool before we started using it, and we figure about 40% of our calls will move through the alternate track. When we did our research around the country and other states, we did find some states that found early on more cases went traditional than alternate, but as they practiced over time, more cases would move into the alternate track. And I think it goes to them developing their expertise and engaging families and getting them connected with the service array. They find that more families they can move through the alternate track. So we're going to start with the assumption that less than half will move to the alternate track.
Less than half, okay. I'm curious, though, about the whole intake process, though, because first of all, I don't know how much information, and when we say reporters, we don't mean news reporters. I mean people who are reporting suspected child abuse and neglect. It seems like they'd probably be asked a bunch of questions by the screener that they wouldn't necessarily have concrete answers for. You know, they see something, but they're not sure it means another thing, that sort of thing. So this has to be a fairly rigorous process. The screener has to be very well prepared, that's for sure.
Yes, I did. First, I would say that the reporter I am talking about is someone that calls us because they're concerned that, about a child's safety. And trainers are, I mean, screeners are trained to, you know, make some inquiry that gets at why the reporter believes that may be true. And so it's they may ask them some information they don't know, but they're really trying to get at is this, what is it that is concerning the caller to the level that they would actually contact the department? And from that, there are some, you know, statutory definitions of abuse, and they're looking for some of those elements when they have that conversation with the reporter.
And so I'm curious to know, I mean, do people often wait? I mean, nobody's going to call, I would think, on unless something is egregiously happening right in front of them. It's probably going to be some time of lingering suspicions until something rises to the level of, okay, wait a minute, I've seen this too much now, I'm going to call DHS. Is there usually a pretty good lag then between what they think is the first suspicion and the time of actual reporting?
You know, I don't think we've ever kind of done any metrics on that, but I will say that in Oregon we have a mandatory reporting law, and so there are certain groups of people that are required to call if they suspect child abuse or neglect. I think for the general public, what we encourage is that they just call us if they have that suspicion. And we may not be able to do something when they first call, but I think what you've identified, that people have a lingering kind of thought that something's happening, we would prefer they go ahead and call us and let us have some conversation with them than wait. And it's not an easy thing, I think, to call the child welfare system about those concerns. So we really want that information as soon as we can get it. And we may actually have some suggestions. If we can't actually go see the family because they don't qualify for the service, we may be able to have some suggestions for that caller to help them feel a little bit better about what's going on.
The first time somebody calls in, is there a case number assigned? I mean, is it set up as a case, or is it just some lower-level sort of informational file?
It's set up as a case as soon as it gets to the place where the screener believes that child abuse is potentially happening. So when they reach the level of alleged abuse, then we open up a case. We'll open up a file.
All right, but it doesn't hurt anyway to call and say, you know, I got these suspicions. What should I be doing about this?
No, it absolutely does not hurt. And I do have some numbers around how many calls we get. These are from 2012,
okay.
But we got almost 70,000 reports in that year.
Mm-hmm.
And of that, about 31,000 were actually referred for a visit from the department. So that's a little under half of the calls that we received actually rose to the level where they qualified for us to go out and see the family. And that's a good thing. You know, difference of about 40,000 calls, we want those calls so that we can make that determination.
You'd rather have more information than less, for sure.
I would rather have an increase in the number of people that call us than think people are out there not calling us.
So in the 31,000 cases referred, and again, we're talking calendar year 2012, I mean, how many of those rose to the level of putting kids into foster care?
In 2012, of that 30,000, 20% of them, which is 6,300, were actually founded for abuse. And of that 20%, only 26 were removed from their home, children removed from their home. So of that number that had founded, we were able to either close the case because the child was actually safe, even if the abuse occurred, or we were able to work with those families with their children at home.
All right, the 26 you mentioned, was that 26 period or 2,600?
It's 26%.
26% of the 6,300?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Removed from homes. Okay.
So of the families that we actually see, only about 5% of those families end up with their children having a foster care experience.
All right. So that's about 1,600 kids in 2012 or 1,600 families that had children sent into foster care? If we're doing 26% of 6,300. I'm doing math on the fly here. I realize.
Yeah, okay, because I'm not good at math on the fly.
All right. But if we take half of 6,300, we're at 3,100, and half of that is about, 1,550.
Well, I don't actually have that number, and I believe your math. and what I could, what the, I'll say the number I do have is that about 6,239 children were in family foster care on any given day in Oregon, but that's all the kids in care, not the number that came into care.
All right.
So I trust your math, Jeff.
6,239. We're talking to Lois Day, who's the Child Welfare Director for the state of Oregon, and we're talking about, well, essentially two things involving foster parents. Number one, it is National Foster Care Month, and number two, this is the month that DHS is rolling out the differential response model for abuse and neglect cases, which would perhaps involve more cases in which, and we'll check that with Lois in a moment, in which kids would not necessarily go into foster care. Join us on the exchange with questions or comments, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So I guess that does get us to the major question here, is does this potentially mean fewer children going into foster care, dropping that 6,239 number at any given time down?
That is certainly our goal. So I wanted to just make a statement about the interface between differential response and our desire to reduce the number of children that have a foster care experience and the fact that this is Foster Care Month. Foster care is probably the most important service any child welfare program has, because there are kids who can't be safe at home, and we have to have a place for them to be safe and nurtured while we're working with their family in hopes of getting them home. And you, as you said at the beginning of the show, Jeff, you understand that because you're a foster parent. So you know the kids who come into care and what they've experienced and how important that is. So I want foster parents out there to hear that they are such an essential piece of our program being successful, and thank them for their service. What we know about foster care, though, is it's a temporary service. It's extreme to remove kids from their home. We need to only do it when it's the only option for keeping them safe. And then we really need to make sure that as soon as they can safely return home, that we make that happen. And so with differential response, what other states have found is that the number of children that have a foster care experience does go down. And we believe it's because we're able to engage the family as part of the driver in the services they need. And with this expanded service array in Oregon, we're going to be able to refer them to get to those services. But there will continue to be children that come into care, and we will continue to need skilled foster parents available for those children.
Given that Oregon is still emerging from the Great Recession, and there has been great pressure over that time on service agencies, I mean, are the service agencies you're partnering with equipped well enough in all communities to be able to deliver the kinds of services you're talking about?
Well, we believe they are, and really a critical piece of that was the legislature's endorsement of that service array and providing financing so that we could actually contract to expand the number and variety of services that are available in communities. Really, I think for this effort to be successful, and what we're working hard with communities on, is collaborating sort of across the array of family needs in communities. So some families that are really at high need for a service where children are unsafe, we're involved with them. But there's a lot of families in the community that have service needs that haven't yet come to the child welfare system. And so it's important for us that we are collaborating on a local level with all of the service providers and organizations that interact with families to help families before they get to us, and then when they get to us, to get them the help they need so that they can, be stable and a contributing member of the community.
So is a differential response active now? Has it been a slow rollout? Is everybody trained and up to speed, or is it how is this going to be handled?
We're at the very beginning of our implementation. There's three counties that are doing the implementation. We started in May. It's Klamath, Lake, and Lane County. Those three counties stepped forward and said, we want to be first, and we want to help work the kinks out of the design. And so we've just spent a month of intensive training with their staff, and we anticipate beginning to use the alternate track along with the traditional track the last week in May.
I noticed that you were very careful both here and in print releases as well to make the point that it's not saying anything like we don't need foster parents anymore. You do. I mean, given there must be a gap then between what you have in foster parents, just a number now, and what you probably could potentially use.
I would say that we always need foster parents. And even if we have more foster parents than we have children that need placement, that's a good thing, because when a child comes into care, one of the things we really want to be able to do is match that child's needs with the skills of the foster parent so that that can be the most successful foster placement. If you don't have enough foster homes, then you can't always have a good match, and it, you know, requires additional supports for the foster family, and children's needs might not be met at the level we want them to be met. So I just don't believe any child welfare system can have too many foster parents.
And what are the usual obstacles, Lois, quickly before we go, about to people to getting into the foster care system as parents?
I think it just is individual to the family. It's a challenging thing to do, as you're aware, and it's not something that people go into because they're going to get paid a lot of money. It's only a reimbursement for costs to care of that child. So it's really something that has to come from their heart.
All right. We could go on and on about foster parenting and the differential response model, but we'll have to cut it off here. Lois Day is the Child Welfare Director for the State of Oregon in the Oregon Department of Human Services. Lois, thanks so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. That'll do it for this hour of the Exchange. In hour two, we will talk to Sherry Joyner. Her book is Sherry Goes Sane, about her dealing with schizoaffective disorder. That's coming up on the Jefferson Exchange on JPR.